episode 224. Welcome to the Take Up Code podcast, where you can learn valuable insights and skills in programming. I'm Wahid Tanner and will be your host today. How are file systems organized with multiple drives? The solution that was included with DOS and later became part of Windows was to give each drive a letter. The first floppy drive was A, and the second floppy drive was B. The first hard drive was C, and other drives would follow. It's possible to specify that a CD or DVD drive should be something other than the next available letter, and you can access network file systems through drive letters too. This system gives you 26 possible drives. Although drives A, B, and C should really be reserved for floppies and the first hard drive. Whenever you insert a floppy disk, or a CD, or DVD, or even a USB drive, the operating system will detect this event and make that drive letter available for use. So it's not really the drive itself that makes a drive letter, but instead it's the presence of a file system that makes a drive letter. If you have a floppy drive that's empty, we might think of that as drive A, but you won't have a drive A available to use until you insert a floppy disk that contains a file system and the operating system recognizes the file system. Let me be a bit more specific, though. I've been referring to the operating system up until now. It's probably time that I describe something called the shell. The shell is part of the operating system in the sense that you get a shell with the operating system, but it's not part of the deep internals of the operating system. It's like a shell that sits around the operating system. For most of us, the shell is what we see and what we think of as the operating system. It would be like how a company spokesperson can become famous and come to represent the company as a whole. But the spokesperson is not the company, just like the shell is not the operating system. Some operating systems could even have different shells that you can either choose from or maybe install later. It's like choosing a new theme. The entire look and feel of your computer can change with a new shell. With Windows, the shell makes up the desktop and the taskbar. It also forms the file explorer you use to browse for files and the file open dialogs. With a Mac and Linux, it forms the desktops and the launch bar, and probably a lot more. In older text-based operating systems, such as DOS, there was a shell too that was used to manage the command prompts. With Linux and Mac terminal windows, you'll still hear about the Bash shell and the Corn shell, which are two popular command line shells. When you insert a floppy disk, or an optical disk, or a USB storage device, the operating system will be made aware of the new device, but it's most likely the shell that figures out what to do with it. Many operating systems require that the file system that was just inserted must be mounted before it can be used. I remember when Linux was new, this mounting had to be done manually. There was a file that could be updated with instructions to do this automatically. It was still very much a manual process. Mounting the removable file system just made it part of the bigger file system that the operating system managed. To mount a storage device or a floppy drive, you had to specify which device to mount, what type of file system to expect, and where it should be mounted to. Windows took a simpler approach and did the mounting for you to a drive letter. The drive letter forms the root of that file system. Any files and folders in the file system can be accessed by their path, and the path starts from where the drive was mounted. Each drive letter forms a separate file system because each drive letter is the root of all the paths. Linux and other Unix-based computers, such as a Mac, have a single root for the whole file system. When you mount a disk or other device in this system, it becomes part of the overall file system instead of a separate file system. Now, the shell can still get involved with this process and make it seem like the removable storage is separate. And the shell can even make things appear to be part of the file system that aren't files at all. You can do a lot with software. You could write a device driver, which does become part of the inner workings of the operating system, and this device driver can mimic the file system. The lines can be blurred between what is and what is not a file system and where it lives. But in general, the operating system will be responsible for keeping track of the various file systems and how you open and close files. And in general, the shell will be responsible for how you see and interact with the file system. I've mentioned that file systems need to be mounted before they can be used. This can either be done automatically or manually, but they also need to be unmounted. This can be done in a well-defined manner or accidentally. Unmounting is actually a lot more important than it might seem. You see, any file system is really slow compared to a computer's main memory, and the main memory is really slow compared to the various levels of caches in the processors. In order to make computers responsive, there's no way that every time your application wants to change something on a file system that the change can happen immediately. If you have a document or an image file that your application is editing, that file might be several million bytes long, or even more. The only way to make this work is if the application writes the data to the file system driver, which will keep the changes in memory until it has enough queued up to make it worthwhile to send to the file system. There is a type of file system that can exist in a computer's main memory. This is called a virtual file system and can be much faster. Or maybe the file system exists on an optical drive, and to write to this type of media, a laser must burn away a portion of the disk. This is even slower than a magnetic floppy or hard drive. The point is that there can be many different kinds of file systems on different types of drives and media. The operating system and the various device drivers make all this look the same, but you still have the problem of speed. Your application will usually be able to write data much faster than the file system can handle it. The only reason file systems can keep up is either for the application to slow down and wait, or if the application writes some information, does some other work, writes some more information, then does something else, etc. Normally, applications will write information in bursts and let the file system drivers manage when that information actually makes it all the way onto the file system. The information might need to be queued up for a short while in main memory. Now, imagine what happens if you forcibly remove a device with a file system on it before the device drivers have a chance to get everything onto the file system. You can end up with things written only halfway and generally in a mess. The next time you insert this file system, the computer might not be able to make any sense of it. It's been corrupted. When you eject a storage device with the file system, the operating system will make sure that anything still waiting to be written will complete. Once everything is finished, the disk or device can be removed. This process is called flushing the buffers, or just flushing for short. And you can also choose when you want to flush changes in your application. Maybe you let the user save their work, and you want to make sure that everything gets written all the way to the file system. You can flush the files that you have open. That way, if the user decides to remove the disk, you can make sure everything gets written. Even if you're working with a file system on non-removable media, such as an internal hard drive, there's always the possibility that something could crash or the computer could lose power. Flushing may not prevent all file system corruption, but it can really help. Thank you for listening. Make sure to check out the other episodes. And if you get value, please give the Take Up Code podcast a rating on iTunes, hopefully 5 stars, and a review. Your support goes a long way to helping this podcast thrive and help others learn how to program. If you have any questions about this episode or even other programming questions, please ask. Just go to takeupcode.com/contact and submit your question. You can also comment on any episode at takeupcode.com.